Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them, and our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
Hey there, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. It is Thursday, December 21st, 2017. I'm here with Gary D. Robertson. I'm Jeff Tiberi. We're recording in the Natural Sciences Museum in downtown Raleigh, looking back at the 2017 political year in North Carolina politics. We're also going to chat some newsier things from this week as well. Maybe even cricket, because when Gary's around, it is generally time for a cricket
update.
That's right. Gary, how are you? Happy
holidays.
Thank
you. Merry Christmas. I'm glad to be here and with you again. So
glad you're back on the podcast. You spent some time in recent days with the Senate pro tem, Republican Phil Berger, and I believe the 75th governor of North Carolina, Democrat Roy Cooper. Let's start. Who do you want to start with, Berger or Cooper? Who'd you interview first? Let's go chronologically.
I interviewed Phil Berger first, okay. And I would say generally there'll be some stories. Check your local AP wire for those stories coming up. But he certainly continued looking at his review of 2017. You know, he's certainly happy with the tax and regulatory changes that they are continuing to make. He sees this as a continuation of the policies they began in 2011, mm-hmm. that he believes has led to economic prosperity, or you know, and revving up the economic engine of the state. He's been, you know, expressed disappointment with, particularly with the governor not signing the budget bill, mm-hmm. and vetoing it.
Right.
Of course, as you remember, there were some things in there that I'm sure the governor really didn't like, and some of them were focused directly upon him and his ability to do certain things. I think there's a lot of things looking forward early next year. As we know, a special session is going to be happening, and I think still I would say a lot of uncertainty still about what exactly will be in it and what actions they'll be able to take so quickly. I mean, let's remember that the early January session is about 3 weeks away.
Right. That second Wednesday in January, among the items that I would say are on my horizon are possible constitutional amendments, which could be one or two or three of a half dozen things, continued debate about judicial reform. It's possible there could be some sort of stimulus measure as it pertains to this Toyota Mazda factory. And we keep hearing about this. It's Toyota Mazda, right?
That's my understanding. Yeah, I don't know that directly myself.
Car manufacturer. What else is on, your radar for that early January session?
I don't know if you already said this, judicial redistricting.
Yeah.
And certainly it seems as though both chambers see that as something that needs to happen because they believe that the current maps are unconstitutional in some areas as it relates to basically one man, one vote requirements. And also there's concern that some residency requirements may run afoul of the state constitution.
Yeah.
Again, do they have the bandwidth to get that done? In a season where, again, 3 weeks from now and a week and a half of it is taken up by holidays and people going places.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's still going to be a tough lift, for the heavy lift for them.
And you wrote about this last week, just the fact that it seems as though there's still some pretty big differences between the chambers and what they want. And, we haven't necessarily hit an impasse or stalled out at this point, but there's no consensus as to what to do pertaining to judicial changes.
I don't think that it doesn't seem to me that based on my listening to the Senate committee that's been looking at this issue, at least having at least three meetings, I think I've been to nearly all of it or listened to all of it. There seems to be some division among Senate Republicans about whether even a change is needed to how judges are selected. Mm. As we know, it's head-to-head elections generally right now, with the governor having a significant role filling appointments without any involvement by the legislature. There are some that want to move to a more, my air quotes are up here, merit selection, where there would be potentially a retention election. But I've heard from some, you know, there's some Republicans on that committee that say, you know, what's wrong with the current system we have right now? Is it, you know, and which is interesting because you hear that also from Governor Cooper and particularly Judge Stevens, who, as you maybe some of your viewer listeners remember, last week was not allowed to speak before the committee. He said afterwards, he said, what wrong has the judiciary done to merit a wholesale change in how they're selected? So it's interesting, given that historically speaking, you have lawyers and judges saying we need to change the way we select judges. And now it seems like, at the very least, it seems like it would seem very highly unlikely that anything will be considered in January on that.
Chatting with Gary Robertson, State House reporter for the Associated Press here on the WDUNC Politics Podcast. Let's shift over to the governor. You sat down with him at the Executive Mansion on, I believe, Tuesday of this week.
Wednesday.
What were some of the takeaways from that conversation?
He is also disappointed with his relationship with legislative leaders, particularly what he sees as their failure to adequately fund public education, and back again to this idea that because they continue to lower tax rates, he says that they are benefiting, those tax cuts are benefiting the wealthiest people and the corporations without taking into account the middle class, and also the fact that education spending has not, in his view, has not kept pace with the needs of the state. Now, let's remember that the tax cuts that were approved last summer, and will take effect in 2019, nearly every taxpayer will get a break because everyone's tax rate will be lowered, and deductions, the standard deduction will go up. So there's a, it's maybe just kind of how you look at it, what glasses you put on, mm-hmm. and we've kind of seen this a little bit in Washington in the past several days.
All right, so Berger says he's not happy with the relationship with Cooper, and Cooper says he's not happy with the relationship with Berger. You've been around this political game for a long time. Do you think they're really disappointed, or are they just saying that?
Well, I think they would be naive if they thought that it would be all roses in 2017, given that the Republicans have controlled state politics essentially since 2011, even when there was a Democratic governor, and now that Governor Cooper has come in, a Democrat. There was going to be some bumps in the road. I think there was some surprises. Senator Berger said, "I wish that he hadn't sued us so much." The fact that the litigation over several laws that in many of them diminished the governor's power. Some didn't, but some did.
Sure.
Or in the governor's view, minimized the judiciary. I think that's something we've never really seen before. I mean, Governor McCrory sued Republican leaders, I believe, just once in 4 years.
Sure.
And that was something that was bipartisan, really, since he had the backing of a former Democratic governor and a Republican governor, I believe, as plaintiff. So disappointment, yeah, but should they have expected this? Yeah, probably. Again, Senator Berger said, you know, it's not as bad as the relationship is not as bad as the media tends to portray it, but it's hard not to look at it and think that even with when Perdue, Governor Perdue, and the Republican majorities met, I mean, there was some friction, but this is a different situation compared to then.
And I would note, feel free to tell me why I'm wrong on this. I would note, or I would say, I wonder if one of the differences is that when Governor Perdue was still in the executive mansion for those 2 years when Republicans took back the legislature, they didn't have supermajorities.
So that's right.
They effectively they had to work with her a little bit more.
That's right.
So I think that you know, a nuanced point of context. Did you get a sense from either the governor or Senator Berger about their optimism, their trepidation, their pessimism toward 2018 and these midterm elections? We're going to have, of course, legislative races in all 170 state house races. And it seems as though, from my vantage point, you know, the points of history tend to be on the side of the Democrats, just related to, you know, Republicans taking back the White House. And it seems as though Democrats here in the state are energized. So I'm a little more interested in if you have a sense from Berger as to, you know, is he fired up? Is he excited? Is he concerned? Did he shed any light on that?
I want to keep my powder dry a little bit because there'll be something again on that on your local AP wire soon. But Senator Berger, he's realistic. I think he understands that the Democrats are energized, but you know they have run an operation over there for several years that have, in many ways, kind of defied critics and conventional wisdom. When it seemed like they couldn't find any more seats to win, they keep finding them, and now they have 35 of the 50 seats. And we keep saying, well, that's got to be the apex. I don't know. But certainly it's they're concerned about it. They're raising money. But I think they, as I've heard from other Republicans, you know, they believe they have a good story to tell about the economy. Of course, the Democrats see that it's that the Republican policies have led to problems in the classroom, or at least of classroom funding, the environment, et cetera, et cetera. So I think they're sober. I think Republicans are sober in realizing that they've got their work cut out for them in 2018. Again, it's a lifetime. It's 11 months from the election, 10 months from the election. Right. That's a lifetime of politics.
Yeah. We're looking ahead at the moment. We'll look back here in a couple of minutes. But it's top of mind. I hadn't jotted this question down until a moment ago. I just thought of it. Really not a great question. But give me a race in each chamber that you are interested to see how it plays out next year, one in the House and one in the Senate.
I think you've caught me a little off guard, but I would say that the Western Wake districts with Tamara Berenger is being challenged so far by a Democrat who seems to be well-funded. Mm-hmm. His name is Sam Searcy.
I believe so, and he was originally a congressional candidate.
That's right.
From my understanding, no notes in front of me, cut himself a pretty big check. I mean, he is, to an extent, self-funded, but he's got wherever it's coming from, I mean, he's got financial backing, and he is now – he's not running for the second congressional seat. He's running for whatever Senate district that is.
I think that'll be interesting because that's a place where – pressures on public schools are often magnified because of the suburban, because of the unaffiliateds. And so the same way, I would say that Nelson Dollar's seat
in the House.
And I believe, I want to say that a Wake County commissioner has announced that he's running. I believe that's the right one.
And this is where you get in trouble on the podcast when you don't have it fired up in front of you. I'm forgetting his name, but he's
I believe
a youngish.
It's Matt Calabria,
absolutely.
I believe
yep,
is his name.
Yes.
Again, Nelson Dollar has been in the legislature. First of all, for your listeners, he's the senior budget chairman and has found ways to win ever since, I believe, 2004. And he's had to challenges from the right and the left, and we'll see how it works this time. But again, it's that same area of the state where people are interested in pocketbook issues, but they're very interested in how their kids' schools are doing, and both of them will have to defend that. And there's going to be a lot of money thrown around there because a lot of often shows up Raleigh TV market, a lot of mailers.
Absolutely. Dollar, for a little bit of context, is a seven-term House incumbent. You mentioned one of the lead budget writers. And for my money, that is one of the most interesting. And he's proven to be, and I don't mean this in a pejorative way, he's been amphibious in some of these races over the last few years, moving far to the right in primaries and coming back toward the middle. And I mean, he's fought off several challengers over the years. And I think this might be, you know, the most challenging one yet, just considering the whole set of circumstances, the year, so on and so forth. But I think you look at Wake County, another name that comes to mind for me is Senator John Alexander. Mm-hmm. That's been a district that's been very close. So these urban, suburban areas may very well decide whether or not the Republicans maintain veto-proof supermajorities in both chambers. And a conventional wisdom that it tends to be a little bit more dubious for them to keep that supermajority in the House. Do you see it that way as well? Or not necessarily?
I think the House, just because of the sheer numbers of seats, mm-hmm. I think Democrats always look at that as the first one that can fall. So,
Gary Robertson here on the WDNC Politics Podcast. Now we're going to chat about the year that was.
Anything happen in 2017?
I'll throw a few at you, and then I'll step out of the way. We had, of course, this ongoing separation of powers, battle, dispute, bout, call it what you want. There were court challenges, conversations about judicial reform. Craft beer emerged. So did a brunch bill. There was this very serious story out of the Cape Fear River Basin, Gen X and water contamination. And, oh, yeah, there was a fix. Some say an adequate fix. Some say an inadequate fix to House Bill 2. A lot of national attention, a lot of things you could touch on. What was your story of the year, or your two or three stories of the year out of North Carolina politics?
I think we talked about this earlier offline, earlier this month. It's still got to be Cooper versus the legislature, or legislature versus Cooper. It's a whole new dynamic, and the fact that Cooper won by such a small margin and won, there's a lot of arguments about why he won, mm-hmm. but clearly House Bill 2 played some role. And to see that kind of play out in the first few months, where really, if you look at it, that's one of the successes of state government this year, is to find that fix. Now, there's a lot of people who think HB 2 was fine. Other people think it was the worst thing that ever happened. But they found something that got the story off the headlines. And we don't hear about it as much as we used to. Mm-hmm. And while there are still court challenges to the replacement bill for House Bill 2, I think it shows also that when push comes to shove, they can work together. But in some ways, why do they – I think both of them see the other as ammunition, mm-hmm. Political ammunition for 2018. And so when they can say, well, we're not getting – we'd like to help work with the governor, but – he doesn't want to work. You know, the argument is, well, he doesn't want to work with us. And the same thing can be said, as you heard in the interview that I made with the governor yesterday. There's the impetus to work together, at least right now, still really isn't there.
You're a baseball guy.
Mm-hmm, I am.
Rookie of the year in the National League this year, Cody Bellinger.
I believe so.
First baseman for the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a rookie of the year in North Carolina politics. A Repub and a Dem, if you so choose, but somebody who more or less, I mean, maybe they didn't break onto the scene, but somebody who had been a municipal official and is now at the state level, or somebody maybe a new municipal official, but somebody who you know, has really garnered a lot more attention in 2017 than they have in the past. And I'm trying to extend this question because you were rubbing your temple, and I wanted to buy you a time or two. A second or two.
Oh,
and we
boy.
Can pass on it if there's – we can come back to it later if you want to think on it.
I could probably have a good answer or two, but I just – no one comes to my mind right now.
Okay.
So –
it's fine. I will – and I don't know if this will prompt you or not. We – candidly for listener, we're here in the studio where we record our conversation with Becky and Rob sometimes on Thursdays, sometimes on Fridays, but I recorded with them earlier, and I'm now trying to think back to some of the names they mentioned. Rob mentioned – he said Jeff Jackson, the Democrat from Mecklenburg County. Becky said – she mentioned Jason Sain, a House Republican, although, you know, he's been around for a couple mm-hmm. of years. But I think those are both interesting ones. She also said Darren Jackson, Russ Henry, engineer extraordinaire, is mentioning to me. Those aren't necessarily super new people. And one name I would put out there, I don't have a Republican to balance it out at the moment. Hopefully I'll come up with one. But there's a lot of attention nationally that came for, I believe it's Braxton Winston, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering that correctly, who's a new city council
That's
member
right.
in Mecklenburg County. And he had been part of this iconic photo that went viral during the protests of 2016.
I think Darren Jackson, from many people don't. You know, outside of his district, didn't yeah. know who he was yeah. now, and now he has taken a more visible role.
Mm-hmm.
there, you know, there are a lot of you know, new Republicans, particularly out west, who have, and I'm sorry, some of their names escape me right now, but some of them have taken up judicial bills. They're making their presence known, mm-hmm. and it'll just be interesting as we go into their second term in 2019, if they remain in the legislature, what kind of roles they'll take. I would say, now that I think about it, John Hardister Guilford County, a Republican, has emerged as one of the vote counters mm-hmm. for House Republicans, and I've heard from others, other legislators and observers, that he has you know, come through on getting right vote counts for some key legislation. So, you know, I would say that he's probably somebody to watch.
Young guy, for
coming
sure.
For you. I believe in his early 30s.
And the name Chuck Hardister, hello. The name Chuck Edwards from Buncombe County, who now has Tom Apodaca's old seat, that name emerged for me as well here in the last few minutes.
Certainly somebody who's taken a driver's seat in the Asheville City Council maps
mm-hmm. that
continuing
tussle.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes statewide.
What is your, we talked about this a little bit half an hour ago with Becky and Rob, what's your read on the Carolina Panthers moving forward? Do you think that this is something, as we think about Jerry Richardson, the sexual harassment allegations that came out and really in quick succession announced he would sell the team after this season, do you think that this is something that is potentially, likely, something else, categorize it however you want, going to emerge as a story in 2018 as we think about incentives or the state playing a role in keeping the Panthers here? Is that going to be a big story?
I did speak with Governor Cooper about that, and he said he was speaking Wednesday. He was planning to speak Wednesday with Charlotte City officials, local officials, to see if there's anything that the state can do to help the Panthers.
Yeah.
He said, you know, he made clear that he sees no reason why they would leave North Carolina. And as you remember, there was some help, I believe, that the legislature mm-hmm. gave the Panthers for the stadium upgrades. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's something that the new ownership comes to. Now, whether it'll be in 2018.
Right. Could be 2019.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
I think there's a sense that they certainly, I think, the governor would prefer to see North Carolinians own the team, but he says he obviously can't control that. But and he, you know, he didn't seem too concerned. I mean, he has a level of concern, but he didn't seem too concerned that somehow the Panthers would go somewhere else.
Okay. A few quick hitters to get you on your way on this this Thursday before Christmas. A favorite holiday tune.
I would say if I had to go on the religious route, there's a song called "Of the Father's Love Begotten," and it was written by the lyrics are written by a 4th or 5th century man.
Wow! Right.
And so it's just kind of neat to when you hear that song that those words have been around for like 1,500 years.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of neat.
That's very neat.
Yeah. I really like I was watching White Christmas with Bing Crosby and Danny Kaye
uh-huh.
Earlier this week. That's White Christmas.
Tough
when
to
Bing
beat.
Sings it, it's yep. It gets you in the heart.
Your love of cricket, where does it come from?
Well, I went to in 2001 I went to England with my family and saw this strange game being played on the telly. And and it was during a time where baseball just hadn't had as much interest for me because I had young kids who hadn't been playing, and I'd stepped away from the game. It was just something different and something interesting. And so it's been, for the last 15 years, I've really kind of learned the ins and outs of the game. I even played it a couple times on vacation, or went to England once and played. For your listeners, one of the biggest things that would surprise you about cricket is that when you hit the ball, you have to take the bat with you.
Huh. I did
As
not
you
know
remember,
that.
Everybody drops it in baseball because you're told to do so, and you're not supposed to take. But you have to take it with you to get your runs. And so,
is it called a bat?
It is a bat.
Okay.
And so it looks like something that you get spanked.
Okay.
A teacher in 1940s
right.
Americana would slap you with, but or maybe from a frat house or something
right,
like that.
Right.
But it's really it's fun to learn a new sport and learn all the lingo. And boy, do they love statistics like baseball. Boy, it's fascinating to hear about them talking about what makes for the best cricketers or the best bowlers. Translation, pitchers for baseball.
Have they moved to sabermetrics?
I think they probably have, but maybe I don't understand it. Maybe their accents are too strong. but anyway, quickly, the reason why it's important right now is because England is in Australia right now for a series called the Ashes, and it's pretty much the biggest trophy in all of cricket. And so I've been following that pretty closely, watching it in the middle of the night or close to the middle of the night.
Do you have some like fancy Australian television station that you've paid for with a sports package, or do you stream
online? No, I've actually, first time I've ever broken down and actually bought something on one of the various providers to buy it for a couple months, and I'm so glad I did.
Nice. All right. Best present you remember getting as a kid?
Oh, I hope I don't forget something. I remember getting some electric football. As you know, I'm in my 40s. If you remember those little things where you turn on the power and it just kind of vibrates and moves things around. That was pretty fun. I also enjoyed the handheld sports games that Mattel used to put out. But I'm sure recently my family surprised me and got me a chair for the bedroom so I could sit in and read. And that was a surprise. I was pretty excited about that. But
nice.
I'm sure I'm missing something, but off the top of my head, those are kind of the things I remember.
We throw them at you on the fly here.
You sure do.
Anything else? Any questions for me? Any other note to end on here?
I think that there was a time between about late 2015 all the way through, I would say, the close of the 2017 long session where, personally, as a reporter who's been with AP for almost 25 years and have covered legislature for off and on for 20, I've never seen, in terms of the level of interest and the level of news that has come out of North Carolina politics, and so much of it was related to HB2. But for all the other things we mentioned, it's been a pretty wild ride, and I think you and I are both thankful that we won't use the particular word.
Begins with a Q.
Yeah, that's right, and ends with a T. But it's nice to kind of get back into the way things usually are, where they have legislative study committees, and there is some news, but it's not the level that we saw, as you remember, this time a year ago when they were holding three special sessions during December. It's nice to get back into the way things usually are.
He has covered the North Carolina General Assembly. And North Carolina politics, I believe, going back five administrations now. And if you're not to make you feel old or anything.
Feeling like David Broder or something.
If you read about North Carolina politics online or in a newspaper, chances are that you have read something by Gary Robertson of the Associated Press. So thank you for your coverage and helping all of us better understand North Carolina
thank
politics.
Thank you. We will see you in 2018. Should be a fascinating year.
Absolutely. You can download the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Feel free to give us a rating or a comment there as well, and find previous podcasts from throughout 2017 at any of those locations or at our website, wunc.org. For Gary, I'm Jeff. Have a Merry Christmas and a happy holiday week. We'll talk to you in 2018.